Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, local talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. What are the greatest promises and the greatest problems facing life as it is today in North Central Wisconsin? Once again, a comprehensive survey of conditions and attitudes has been published, and once again, its results are intriguing and challenging. It's called the LIFE Report, which is an acronym that stands for Leading Indicators for Excellence, compiled by the Community Planning Council of Marathon County, engaging a wide swath of information concerning work, schools, public safety, the environment, health, and family life. Today on Route 51, we're going to examine two areas that have been identified as our greatest problems in North Central Wisconsin, poverty and domestic violence, and we will be looking at their impact on the general population and particularly on children. Our panel consists of Tom Rao, Executive Director of The Neighbor's Place, which helps low-income residents in the greater Wausau area. Jane Graham Jennings, Executive Director of the Women's Community, which offers support and shelter for the victims of domestic abuse. And Jeff Sargent, the North Central Area Director of the Children Service Society of Wisconsin. Jeff is also a member of the LIFE Steering Committee. Now, as always, we will be taking your phone calls. Our phone numbers, if you're in the Wausau area, 261-6371. That's 261-6371, or toll-free 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And our lines are open. Jeff, for those who are unfamiliar with the LIFE report, tell us how the information was put together.
Well, the LIFE report is put together looking at a variety of indicators that measure the quality of life, and it also looks at data that is collected on some of the topics you mentioned in the intro in terms of work, quality of life from the standpoint of housing, issues related to family life, health, and so there's this broad spectrum of issues that the report's trying to deal with.
Is most of this done in one-on-one interviews with common, ordinary people in Marathon County, or is there a more sophisticated, complex way of getting the data together?
Well, there's a couple of ways that it's done. One is that a survey is sent out to residents in Marathon County, and for this report, 4,000 surveys were sent out, and about 28% of those surveys came back. So part of the results come from survey information from residents in Marathon County, and then other parts of it come from information data sources such as the census, state, federal, local government types of sources that give information.
28% is a pretty good return level, yeah. But even so, that leaves out 72% of the population that got a survey and for whatever reason didn't answer it. Is there some other way of gauging how that other portion of the population feels about things?
In the past, we used to do phone surveys. The LIFE report's been going on for 12 years. This is the sixth edition.
Every 2 years you do
every
one.
2 years. And we used to do phone calling. And the results on the phone calling were actually worse than 28%. So 28% in terms of mail-in surveys is pretty good. But, you raise a good point. That does leave a large chunk of the population that we're not quite sure what they think about these issues. And that's why organizations like the women's community and the Neighbor's Place work with a variety of different populations in our community. And that's how we can also gauge how these issues are being impacted.
And you look at things in a variety of categories. We're going to be focusing particularly on two of the big problems that were identified in the family life area. But in work, one of the improvement areas in that category, we need more jobs with good wages.
Absolutely. And that's a poverty issue potentially as well from the standpoint of poverty can be defined in a variety of ways. One of them is the actual federal poverty line. And then there's also other percentages that we look at and that get into issues of like near poor or people that are living on the periphery of poverty. And that's where jobs with good wages comes into a big role, because many people are employed, but their wage is not enough to sustain them at a level that is a good quality of life for them.
Tom Rao, at the Neighbor's Place, you see a lot of people, I imagine, who would fit into that near-poor category, people who are working, but their wages just don't cover their day-to-day needs.
I would agree, and I think Jeff makes an excellent point. You can take a look at what is defined as the poverty level, but I think that increasingly the bigger amount of people are those that are right on the edge. Just take a look at the weather that we're having right now, this cold weather. All of a sudden, the heating bill is a lot bigger than maybe they expected. Or older cars, many of us have dealt with that in the past, start not working as well as they should. Any kind of occurrence like that, unexpected in their lives, can drop them instantly, even though their income might put them above poverty, but that kind of an expense can drop them below the poverty line.
The heating bill, that's a shocker. We live out in the country. We have liquid propane, and the bill was twice as much as it was last year to fill up the pig in the backyard. And I don't know how people who are just getting by can deal with that kind of an impact.
Yeah, I think that especially impacts the elderly that are trying to hang on maybe to a home that they've lived in for a very long time, and now all of a sudden all of these added expenses and unexpected big expenses are impacting their life.
Well, we'll get into all of that in just a bit. Let's go back again to the Life Report and just give a quick overview. The area of schools, we had concerns with the success of youth programs. Jeff, explain that to us.
Yeah, in Marathon County, there are a lot of programs and services that work with youth populations, but there are gaps there. And part of what the Life Report's trying to get at is to help youth-serving organizations see what needs might be emerging, and certainly after school types of programming, places for kids to go, and what the Life Report tries to do is also provide some information for the community around what services are available for young populations, and there's never enough resources for those types of kids.
Moving on to safety, crime, and diversity. The crime rate has gone up, but it's still a heck of a lot safer in Wausau than it is in Milwaukee, Chicago, the Twin Cities, or even Madison.
Yeah, the results show that of the people that answered the survey, 90% of the residents in Marathon County feel safe or very safe. But yet we also see that there are spikes. For example, in the city of Wausau, violent crime is up in Wausau. And so you have sort of this dichotomy of, in the city, you know, there's been some spikes of serious crime, but yet overall people feel safe. And I think that's what's sort of the beauty of the Life Report, is that it's not all a positive picture, or it's not all just about challenges and concerns. It's about the whole scope of life here, and that's what makes it interesting to really study and look at, because there are many things that you can find in this report that help answer questions.
Jane Graham Jennings, one of the problems that overlaps between family life and crime, of course, is the problem of domestic violence. Have you seen a spike in domestic violence statistics?
Well, we certainly in Marathon County in the last 2 years have seen an incredible spike in homicides and also suicide in domestic-related incidents. We've had homicides within families in our community in the last 2 years at a level that we haven't seen before. The Life Report also reflects the rapid increase in reported cases of domestic violence to law enforcement in the community, and that has continued to increase since about the year 2000. But there's some good factors when we consider reported domestic violence. One of the things about domestic violence that we know is it has no boundaries. It crosses all socioeconomic, ethnic, class. It doesn't know any boundaries. But many people are still ashamed when they are a victim of this kind of crime and living in a home where there's violence. They may never report it. So we can kind of measure that our community has done something successfully, because our criminal justice system, which is where reports are made, has responded in a way that more people feel safe to report when they are a victim of domestic violence. So although it's alarming and we should be concerned about the level, it also may give us some indication that our criminal justice system in our community is responding in a way that makes it easier for victims to report.
Now, you mentioned suicide calls and mental health issues, and Jeff, that's also something that came up in the health area of the Life Report.
Yeah, suicide is an issue from the standpoint of there are mental health issues that are serious, and as a community, how are our residents dealing with those issues? And unfortunately, in Marathon County, there has been an increase in suicide as an option, and that's a real concern, and that does come out in the Life Report.
The statistics in the Life Report, I've got them in front of me, an average of 12 per 100,000 suicides, and that's higher than the national average. You wouldn't think it would happen in central Wisconsin. 400 calls were made to the North Central Healthcare Crisis Line in 1 year from people thinking of suicide.
Right. I think still in our society, there is a stigma attached to mental health issues, and that is one of the big barriers and obstacles is people seeking out help. They are uncomfortable doing it. They don't want others to know, especially, let's say, it's an issue of depression. If you're out there suffering from depression or you have mood swings and or an anxiety disorder, it's very uncomfortable to share that with somebody and to talk to somebody about
sometimes
that.
Sometimes it's difficult to talk at all if you've got depression.
Yeah.
It's hard to relate to other people.
Yeah, I mean, symptoms of depression can, you know, range the gamut. Not everybody, you can't just look at somebody and see if they're depressed or not. But in many people, it does lead to isolation, you know, sleeping more, not going out, not maintaining those relationships with friends and relatives, and so that can become that can be a real issue is not knowing what to do with that, but feeling a stigma about taking steps to try to address
it. And that's one of the ways the Life Report can really be utilized for public, private, county, government, all kinds of people coming together that can use a Life Report that pulls out problems we may not want to address or look at. And we can take public, private organizations, public organizations, businesses, and there's a variety of different people in this community working on these issues together. So the Life Report gives us a tool to develop dialogue and communication about all these things, to celebrate our successes and at the same time challenge ourselves to make this a wonderful place to live.
And, you know, if you don't compile the statistics on something like suicide in the Life Report, they are going to be ignored by society. We have a taboo in the broadcast news business of talking about suicide. Somebody commits suicide, it certainly doesn't show up in an obituary unless it's a public figure and it was a public event. And we simply ignore it. We don't talk about it. It's like it doesn't exist.
Well, and that's why the Life Report, the way it's structured, and part of the reason we're talking today is that there are some key calls to action, two of which we're talking about today, domestic violence and poverty, but there are many other challenges. And so, you know, there are community strengths, and then there are community challenges, and that the Life Report tries to show that we have opportunities to take care and begin to address some of these issues.
Also in the area of health, obesity, that's something that goes without saying, I guess. You know, it's something that is a nationwide problem. It's particularly a problem, I think, in north central Wisconsin because of our diet. And maybe the cold weather has something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, the survey this time around, or in beginning in 2003, added a question about height and weight as a way to allow us to calculate body mass index. And 64% of the people that returned the survey this year in 2007 indicated that they were overweight or obese. And we're hearing from statistics and media reports that is an issue in this state. And certainly that seems to bear itself out even in just people reporting themselves. And then that taps into all the health issues related to obesity and people being overweight. And Marathon County does a really good job of trying to understand health issues through the county health assessment that's done every 2 years as well.
Now, alcohol abuse is something that rears its ugly head every time you do one of these reports. And the statistic that just blows my mind, and for people who don't drink or drink very little, it's shocking to find out that one out of every five residents of Marathon County admits that within the past month they've had five or more drinks at one sitting. That's one out of every five, and those, or one out of every four, it's 25%.
25%.
So that's one out of every four, and those are the people that admit it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, binge drinking, you're right. It's not a surprise necessarily in Wisconsin where we're talking about issues of alcohol use. But, you know, when you talk about life in Marathon County, unfortunately, alcohol plays a big part of life for some people. And as you said, you know, one out of four is indicating that they basically binge drink, that they're having more than five in one sitting.
And along with that, there's the increase in alcohol and drug arrests. Last year, every week, and this is another one that just blows my mind, an average of two people every week were arrested for their fifth drunk driving offense in Marathon County. What does it take to get through to these people?
How long is this show? I think that's a challenge. I mean, because clearly part of that has to do with state law, and you know, Wisconsin's got some restrictions on how they handle drunk driving. In some states, it's handled much more strongly than it is here. So part of that has to do with what judges have at their disposal in terms of how they deal with drunk driving.
I think there's been a bill passed in the legislature mandating prison time for people who have seven drunk driving arrests or more.
But
so, you know, those of you who have had five, if you're one of those two that have been arrested, you've got one more, and then you're going to spend some jail time. I guess that's an improvement.
You know, that's an interesting way. It seems like whenever we have a problem, and this is out of my expertise a little bit, but we always want to put people in jail. And I don't know, but it seems that whenever you take a good look at this, that it's actually counseling and programs and working with these people that works a lot better than putting them into jail. And I think it's a very easy fix to take a look at a statistic like that and say, well, lock them up and throw away the key. I don't think that really gets at the problem, or it really doesn't get at the what is the problem for so many issues.
So. And if I can just add to what Tom said, you know, the three of us are on the Marathon County Community Planning Council, and one of the issues that we're talking about has to do with crime and the criminal justice system in this county. And this taps into this notion of what is the best way to deal with criminal activity, and what types of models are out there that can help us solve this problem, because clearly the issue of the jail is going to be coming up here in this county.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the council is looking at some ways to try to help educate the community to get people involved in this discussion, because kind of as Tom mentioned, just putting people in jail doesn't really solve the problem. It solves it immediately from the standpoint of that person is no longer available to do whatever they were doing, but they're only going to be in there for a certain amount of time, and then they come back out. And then what happens?
And under health, the final category, the affordability of health care and the availability of dental health care, those are all poverty issues in
Absolutely.
A lot of ways. And so what we're going to do now is take a break, and we'll be back to talk about those. We're talking about the Life Report on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Ministry Healthcare and Ministry Medical Group, with clinics in Amherst, Iola, Plover, Stevens Point, Waupaca, and Wausau Weston, where caring makes the connection, on the web at ministryhealth.org.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
I'm Glenn Mober. You're listening to Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. Our subject today is the Life Report. It's a survey of leading indicators in Marathon County, and by extrapolation, all of North Central Wisconsin, to the big problems we're facing: poverty and domestic violence. Our guests, Jane Graham Jennings, the Executive Director of the Women's Community, Tom Rao of the Neighbor's Place, also Jeff Sargent of the Children's Service Society of Wisconsin, will be taking your phone calls if you want to join the conversation at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Tom Rao, we appear to be on the brink of a recession in this country, and there are a lot of people that you serve every day at the Neighbor's Place who, for all practical purposes, have been living in a recession of their own for years now. Your response to what's been happening in the news and on the stock market over the last week or so?
One thing for certain, not too many of the people that we deal with at the Neighbor's Place have really been following the volatility of the stock market. I don't think they're invested in that. But you bring out an excellent point. Something that's just struck me is kind of very much tells us where we are as a country. The stock market has taken this dip, and all of a sudden, you notice the attention that it's getting from the Congress and the president. And it raises for me a big question about who is important in this country, who isn't. How quickly can the Congress and the president react to something when certain people are being affected by what's happening? As you said, a lot of the people that we deal with at the Neighbor's Place have been living in desperate times for many years. And I think continues to get a little bit worse each year. Poverty just isn't what it used to be. There are many more people. We talked about it a little earlier tonight. Those that are in that category of near poor, where one thing happening in their life can push them over the edge and make things very difficult for them. I think poverty is an issue that it casts its shadow over the whole life report.
The proposal, the bipartisan proposal that apparently has been approved by the president and congressional leaders, calls for tax rebates for middle-income earners. I suspect a lot of the people who go to the Neighbor's Place aren't going to be getting those checks in the mail.
Well, if it's only for the middle class, I would guess that the people at the Neighbor's Place are not going to get it. I haven't seen, there was some talk about making those rebates available to all people. There even was some talk about making, improvements to the food stamp program.
Hold those thoughts. We'll be back with more of Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin, on the Ideas Network after we take this break for news. We are back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin, talking about the Life Report, a survey of the promises and the problems facing folks in North Central Wisconsin in a variety of areas. We're focusing on family life, where two of the greatest problems are poverty and domestic violence. If you're just tuning in, our guests are Jane Graham Jennings. She's the Executive Director of the Women's Community, which offers support and shelter for the victims of domestic abuse. Also, Tom Rao, Executive Director of the Neighbor's Place, which helps low-income residents in the greater Wausau area. And Jeff Sargent, the North Central Area Director of the Children's Service Society of Wisconsin. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg, and Tom, we were just talking about the President and Congress's plan to address the spiraling downturn in the economy, tax rebates for middle-income earners, and you were just saying that maybe that's not the way to get money in the hands of people who are going to spend it right away.
Well, again, I'm not an expert in economics, but it always seemed to me when you look at a problem like this where you want money to be spent in your economy, that the logical place to go with that money is to people that you would target people that have needs in their lives that are not being met. And that would be the very poor, the poor and the near poor. And, you know, when you target people that are basically meeting most of their needs and perhaps even, you know, getting most of their wants met, then I begin to wonder whether the money given there is actually going to find its way quickly back into the economy the way it would if you went to the poor or near poor.
Well, you'd think that a lot of people who are middle income are going to take that money and pay off some of their debts. We have huge credit card debts. And if that's the case, it's not going back into the economy right away. Somebody who needs food on the table, I think, could probably use food stamps and would go out and...
That's exactly right. You know, if you don't have enough food for your family and you get some money, that's where you're going to spend it, hopefully. Either there or perhaps putting, you know, gas into the car to get to work, buying clothing that they need for the weather or what have you. It just seems that, again, the people that have needs that are not being met, these are needs in their life, these would be the logical people that you would, give money to.
2616371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Dan in Wausau, you're on Route 51. Hello, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to say I saw an interview with an author of a book called Free Lunch, who's apparently won Pulitzer Prizes for some of his prior work. And when your guest talked about Congress responding because the stock market's in trouble, we have a government that definitely caters to the wealthy and doesn't really care about us in the middle. In this book, the author detailed research he'd done that shows that right now, adjusted for inflation and per capita, not aggregate, but per capita, the United States has twice the real wealth it had in 1980, and that the economy on an ongoing basis produces $1.70 worth of goods and services for every dollar it produced in 1980, so you would think we should all be pretty well off, except that that entire increase and then some has gone to the top 10% because the bottom 90% actually have lower per capita income than we had in 1980. I feel that's a direct result of tax policies and economic policies, and that our government, especially at the federal level, caters to the politically connected super rich and kind of just leaves the rest of us the crumbs.
Any comments in response to Dan's comments?
Well, I think it's a wonderful comment, and I saw this author. I believe he was interviewed on Bill Moyer's Journal on public television.
Anybody well, think of his name?
I can't think of his name. His book was Free Lunch.
Yeah.
And he was interviewed by Amy Goodman the end of last week on Democracy Now!
Okay. Well, I believe that I saw him, I'm fairly positive, on Bill Moyer's Journal, and you know, in addition to what your caller is talking about, I mean, the point of the book is that if we're looking at a welfare state, what has happened is that it's welfare for the rich and the rich corporations, those people that are able to contribute to the political campaigns. And he does quite a job of documenting this. It's a very interesting, I would guess, a very interesting read.
Right. The thing that outraged me the most was when he discussed tax increment financing, which I...
Well, that has been used as a tool to stimulate investment in our local economies across the board. It's been used in the village of Weston to great success. They have an industrial park that was created by tax increment financing. And in downtown Wausau, it was used to help spur development there as well.
Now maybe what he means by it in the book, but tax increment financing in most localities, according to this author, means that people collect the sales tax and pocket it. They don't pay it to the state.
I'll have to pick up the book and get his take on it. Dan, thanks so much for your comments. You're a little bit off subject, but not by far.
I think it's closely related. Thank you.
We appreciate the phone call.
I think it's important, something that Tom said earlier, when we recognize the way we think about people who live in poverty, we we kind of have this pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality as a nation, which is not necessarily a bad thing. However, it does cast kind of a shadow over people who are simply trying to get by and are one catastrophe away from homelessness and poverty. And sometimes we just don't take enough time to step back and look at all of the contributing factors to people's lives that complicate and put them in positions that maybe they shouldn't be in. And we tend to think of things in helping people in poverty as handouts when someone just really needs a break.
Jane, you see people from all walks of life at the women's community, but to what extent does poverty play a role in domestic violence? The stress of having to get by day to day, not knowing where your next paycheck is coming from, is that related to the kinds of social, I can't think of the word that I'm looking for right now, but the kinds of situations that would certainly not be conducive to a lot of harmony in the home?
Well, poverty is certainly not causal in domestic violence, as you clarified that it crosses all boundaries. But it certainly is correlated in that one of the biggest factors for someone who is living in a violent home and contemplating whether or not they can make it without the income of their partner, sometimes they simply can't. And so their options are live with the violence or be homeless. And for many, many people, the option of living in the violence is easier for them than not knowing where their next meal is going to come from. There are also numerous national statistics around the what happens with victims of domestic violence when they flee violent homes. The level of poverty increases greatly. The number one cause of homelessness in mayors around the country were surveyed, and they said their number one cause of homelessness in their communities were women and children fleeing violent homes. So there are many compounding factors for domestic violence. At our agency, we tend to see more folks who are in poverty, not because that's who's experiencing more violence, but simply because folks who have more resources don't see themselves as wanting to reach out to our services. The stigma still attached with being a victim, the level of shame. People who have a social standing in the community may feel like they're going to lose everything if anyone finds out what's happening behind closed doors. So more people who don't have resources seek out our services, but we certainly know that that's not all the people it's happening to.
Or maybe if somebody's got at least a modicum of income, they can go to a hotel for
exactly.
the night instead of
exactly.
making use of your shelter. Jeff, the effect of children on both of these issues, poverty and domestic violence.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think what many people don't seem to realize is that a fair number of people living in poverty are children. And in the Life Report, it does talk about almost 12% of the of Marathon County under the age of 18 live in poverty. And that's up 25% from 2000. So there's an increase in kids living in poverty. And clearly, you know, children living in poverty, having to deal with having their needs not being met, has implications all across the board, from health and their development, brain development issues. You know, the majority of brain development and learning happens in the first 5 years of a child's life. And so if we have children living in conditions where their needs aren't being met, that's going to impact
them. Where they don't have enough food,
yes.
where they're wondering where they're going to stay at night, where they're
right.
not sleeping at night because,
yes.
you know, maybe mom and dad are fighting, or there are other problems where they have to move from place to place and they have to deal with school at an early age. All of that takes these kids and puts them at a huge disadvantage.
Absolutely. And domestic violence, from the work at the Women's Community and other agencies that deal with this issue, many of the parents involved in these disputes feel that their children are kind of exempt from it, or that their children aren't aware that it's occurring. And from what we know at Children's Service Society and what the Women's Community knows from their work with children, the children absolutely know what's going on. They may not understand all the issues that are factoring in there, but they're being impacted. They have all kinds of emotions they don't know what to do with. They experience behavior problems that they don't know how to handle those emotions. And so I think there's this especially from the couples involved in conflict, they believe that their children aren't being impacted, but we absolutely know that they are. And if you talk to teachers at schools, they can tell you when those kids walk in, something's going on, and they can see it in their affect, their school performance, their socialization. All those things are impacted by both of these issues.
What can teachers do about it?
Well, I think one thing they can do is be aware of if they see something that's out of the ordinary or different.
Or that, maybe really dangerous.
Yes. Well, then we're talking about issues of trying to work with those families to try to understand what's going on. If a child is in a dangerous situation, you know, then, you know, there might be reporting issues that need to come into play. But domestic violence, and Jane can talk about this, you know, that's not an easy thing, especially when you have kids maybe that are having visitation, and if their parents are separated and they're seeing dad one weekend and then they're with mom and there's conflict there, that puts those kids in a really tough spot. And so it's complicated, and Jane, I don't know if you want to weigh in on that, but that's not easy.
Jane, how many of the people who come to the women's community have children, and how many are single? You know, at least that was the wrong word to use, but are in relationships where they don't have children.
Sure. Probably between 80 to 85% of the adults we serve have children, dependent children, that many bring with them to shelter if they use our shelter services or the other services that we provide. Most of the folks we work with have children that are witnessing or are exposed to this. And what we know about domestic violence in violent homes is oftentimes an abusive parent may turn the abuse onto the child. That's not all the time, but it's a higher likelihood statistically that a child who lives in a home where one parent is abusing another, that they're likely to become the target of that abuse as well. So there's risk factors there. And I think one of the things that we always talk about is how do we prevent this, because it's such this big issue. And there's strategies that we all try to think of, and you ask the question about what can teachers do. And I think we all need to work together and talk about these issues. Teachers are in a position that they're with children for a long time while they're in school, 8 hours a day. And we can tell the kids in school all day long that violence isn't the way. But when they go home and their reality is very different, what they learn in school doesn't necessarily live true to what their experience is. So we have to think on a variety of different ways. There's no one approach that's going to help prevent any of this. So we need to all be talking about it and working together and keeping each other informed. And some kids do a really great job of hiding the violence because that's what they've had to do to survive in that home. So teachers may not have any idea of what they're seeing. So it's all really a community effort to talk to one another and, again, alleviate the shame that we put on victims.
You're listening to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
You get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life. Why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This is Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking about the Life Report, which is a survey of indicators for the quality of life in Marathon County, by extrapolation, all of North Central Wisconsin, because Marathon County is very similar in a lot of ways to all of the counties that we're broadcasting to right now. And two of the biggest problems are domestic violence and poverty. Our guests, Jane Graham Jennings of the Women's Community, Tom Rao of the Neighbor's Place, and also Jeff Sargent of the Children's Service Society of Wisconsin. We're taking your calls at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Let's go back to the phones. Ann in Rothschild, you're on Route 51. Hello, Ann.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
My question is for Jane, to get back to what she was talking about before, about how difficult it is for these victims to separate themselves from their partners, often for economic reasons. I'm just wondering, do any victims and their children ever make it out? What, you know, how do the victims who successfully get away make it? What resources are available for them financially?
Let's talk about the success stories. That's a good question.
Absolutely. The majority of victims that leave are able to leave violent relationships. The majority of them are able to move on to other situations. Now, that being said, it is not an easy journey. There are multiple issues that one who is in leaving a relationship has to tackle. First and foremost, one of the things that happens oftentimes, and this is particular in marriage households where it is a man and a woman, and the female is a victim and is leaving the relationship, male abusers tend to stalk and harass their victims long after they have attempted to leave the relationship or left the relationship. And that's something that people don't fully comprehend and understand what makes that happen and why would a victim stay in a relationship. So if they are able to leave, if they find that that's their choice and that's their option, oftentimes they are stalked and harassed to a degree that many of us wouldn't be able to endure. So they are able to get away. They still have those additional barriers. Oftentimes when a woman leaves a marriage, her standard of living decreases drastically. That's played itself out over time, so we know that to be true. So they have to find additional resources. Marathon County, we are very fortunate that there are multiple agencies and resources available to help our community members who are in similar situations to get out. There's the 211 United Way call can really help people find what resources to be hooked up to. There's all of our agency programs like the Neighbor's Place and the Women's Community, our community action program that helps with housing, Salvation Army to also help people transitioning. There really are a multitude of agencies in our community that can help people. But thank you for asking the question, because certainly most victims who are able to leave, if they are able to make a life for themselves, but it's not easy and they need all the help they can get along the way.
Okay. Well, it's good to know that it's not entirely hopeless, because it certainly sounds that way with all those odds against them. But thank you.
And thanks so much for the phone call. As you mentioned, Jane, this cuts across all kinds of demographics, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because we spent a whole program on it, but what are the challenges that you face in trying to reach immigrant populations, Hispanic and Hmong immigrants who have had a string of very nasty domestic violence incidents over the past couple of years in the greater Wausau area?
One of the things that we've learned in providing services to families is we have to change our approach depending on who the population is that we're serving. So, for example, within the Hmong community, what I've learned and have been taught from our Hmong advocates is that we really need to utilize and engage the clan system. That is extremely important to our Hmong families and not something that a non-Hmong person is familiar with. So we really utilize that. The Hispanic,
you have Hmong counselors on your staff?
We do. We have three full-time bilingual bicultural staff who help us bridge the gap and serve the Hmong victims.
What about Hispanics?
We have one full-time bilingual bicultural Spanish-speaking person, and that's kind of a new area for us. We've had that person for just about a year, and we knew that when we have someone on staff who can speak the language, the gates are going to open. So we've been seeing an increase in that, and particular with Spanish-speaking populations, some of their immigration issues are much more complex than other populations. And so the Neighbor's Place actually has been really helpful in helping us bridge some of those gaps and in partnering with them around how do we respond to our Spanish-speaking communities.
What about alcohol abuse? And we're down to just our last few minutes now. How often is alcohol a factor in these situations?
Again, alcohol is not causal, but it's often correlated. We know that alcohol is often involved when law enforcement is called because it tends to be louder and potentially more violent. But we also know that when you remove the alcohol, you don't stop the abusive behavior. Abuse is always a choice. Someone who uses control and manipulation is doing that by choice and hurting their partner by choice. So remove the alcohol, and batterers treatment programs tell us that over time and time again. You have to treat two different issues. You have to treat the alcohol abuse as one issue, and you have to treat the person who is by choice using violence, which is a separate thing.
Jeff Sargent, do you have any final thoughts? We're down to our last couple of minutes here.
Just that the Life Report is a great resource for the community, and that if they're interested, they can go on to the United Way's website and download the Life Report, or they could stop by the United Way office and pick one up. There's a full report. There's also a snapshot report. And as we've been talking, there's so much information in there that if people are interested and want to learn more about what life is like here, this is a valuable resource for them.
And again, that United Way office is on River Drive on Wausau's east side. It's right across from the library.
Correct, 212 River Drive.
And Tom Rao, we're going to give you the last word here. The economic news is not good for the general economy. It's been bad for years for the people that you serve at the neighbor's place. What hope do you have over the months ahead?
You know, I think things like the Life Report really identify what I think is the way that we're going to solve this problem. I don't think that the answer is going to come from the federal or state government. I think it's going to come from community people taking an interest in these kinds of issues at the community level and saying, enough is enough, we're not going to stand for it, and we're going to try and fix it.
Why shouldn't it come from a federal or state level? We used to have policies that addressed these things.
You and I have talked about that, and I wish that it would. But
you were talking about the federal government providing jobs for poor people since they have to work in order to get welfare. Maybe the federal government should be making sure that they get jobs.
I would love to see that happen, but I think the impetus is going to come from the community level, and they're going to come up with ideas, and they're going to move that up so that maybe then the state and the national governments need to react.
We want to thank today's guests, Tom Rao, Executive Director of the Neighbor's Place of Wausau, Jane Graham Jennings, Executive Director of the Women's Community, and Jeff Sargent, the North Central Area Director of the Children's Service of Society of Wisconsin. And a reminder that copies of the Life Report are available at the offices of the United Way on Marathon County, and that is on River Drive in Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week, we focus on a series of town forums that will take place on the thorny topic of immigration as we welcome Eric Giordano and Jim Veninga, who are both members of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service at UW-Marathon County. That's it for us today. Thanks again for riding with us. Until next week, we're heading out of town.